Okay, so charge density wave. So if we look at the phase diagram, there is a region here of the phase diagram where there's a charge density wave order. And you get sort of direct evidence of this from scanning tunneling microscopy, where you see regions that are this is more or less like a measure of charge, and you see that there's some regular patterns here. But in fact, this has been seen well before 2012 by Seamus Davis and others. But people thought at the beginning, oh, it's just a surface effect. But in fact, it's a bulk effect. And you can see it in these quantum oscillation experiments where you see the Hall coefficient as quantum oscillations, and it becomes negative at low temperature, indicating that there are small electron pockets, whereas it was holes at the beginning. So there's like a Fermi surface reconstruction. And nowadays, in 2013, you see the quantum oscillations are really very, very clear. Now, the group of Henri Julien in 2011 found in NMR signatures of a field-induced charge order. In other words, if you remove the superconducting state by applying a magnetic field, you see this charge order coming in. And this is one of my slides to help me feel less guilty, to show many people. so the here, without applying any magnetic field, there's a direct observation by X-rays of this charge density waves, and other people have done that also. And if you look at the wave vector of that charge order for YBCO, it goes up with under-doping, that is going towards half-filling. And in the case of lanthanum barium copper oxide, it goes the other way as you go closer to half-filling. And there are theories for this that I won't have time to go into, and Catherine here is one of the person who has proposed some nice ideas on this. Now, the thing I want to stress is that there's competition between the charge density wave and the superconducting order. So for example, if you look at the order parameter, let's say the size of this peak here, or the weight of the peak, it increases as you decrease temperature. Then when you hit TC, this is the black dot now, you see the charge order is suppressed. Now if you put a magnetic field that removes the superconductivity, then you see the charge is less suppressed. And if you put magnetic field big enough that you get rid of the superconductivity, then the charge goes up. So the phase diagram is like this. I mean, it's not true long range order that's coming in here, but there's several lattice spacing, and there's a dome that's sort of centered around 12% doping. And this is the NMR transition seen by Marc-Henri Julien's group. And this is the Fermi surface reconstruction line, in other words, the point where the Hall coefficient starts to dip down to change sign. But these two are sort of relatively well defined. Now, there's clearly a back action. In other words, if you look at the superconducting state, you see that the TC seems to want to go up or down, but there's sort of a dip here, which you can think perhaps comes from the fact that in the same way that the superconductivity is detrimental to charge density wave is detrimental to superconductivity. Yes? Yes. So these are results I didn't even have time to write. These came out on the archive today from Louise Taillefer's group. And so it's easy to find. You just look on the archive. And I was busy all day today, so I didn't have time to write it. But if you look at minus dTcdH, so how TC changes when you apply magnetic field, and there's a minus sign because we know that TC goes down, you get these red points. with a peak at 12% doping. Now look at how TC changes with pressure. You see that this is the blue dot. And obviously it's a different scale. But nevertheless, if you look at if you just fix one point, the two curves fit on each other. So it's as if the magnetic field couples to the superconductivity and pressure couples to the charge because it increases superconductivity. Now, if you look at the resulting phase diagram, you see these are the points I just showed you here in green. And if you apply 15 gigapascal, then you see that TC now is peaked around 12%, not around 16 or 15, but around 12%, and there's a single dome. So this is quite amazing. You really see that it's no longer the charge density wave that makes it go down. Here it clearly was the charge density wave, but now that you remove it, it is still there. Now what happens to antiferromagnetism? Does it contribute to push this way? Yes, perhaps. Now, another remarkable fact is that the T star, in other words, where you enter the pseudo gap, you see this is the resistivity as a function of temperature, and you see that at the zero pressure is the blue curve, at 1.87 gigapascal is the red curve, you see that TC has changed, but T star has not moved. So the T star does not come from the charge density wave, because you can get rid of the charge density wave and still have the T star. Now, what about the pseudo gap? What about this line? Let's start to talk about this line in more detail.
Just a question. Are you saying this data that the maximum of the dome is actually at 12%?
Yes.
And is hidden by charge density waves?
Yes.
So the optimal doping at 16, 18 would be a fake.
Yes. Precisely. So there are three classes of mechanism for the pseudo gap. There's competing order, so you have a current loop, stripes, and emmatic, d-density wave, spin-density wave. So it would be a rounded first-order transition. Then you can also have two-dimensional precursors of a lower temperature broken symmetry phase. That's what happens, I think, in the electron dope case. Or it can be due to MUT physics. And the two, we will first consider this MUT hypothesis. This is a caricature for these three different types of phenomena, of explanations of the pseudo gap in these resonating valence band or YZR or these mean field like theory of the MUT, dope MUT insulators. You would get the T star that would touch the superconductor. And in the competing order case, you again have a T star. And if you have some order that would come only at zero temperature, but the third dimension makes it ordered, then you also get some T star somewhere. So why does TC decrease? What is the origin of T star? What is the strange metal that we discussed before? Do we have a broken symmetry or not? What lies beneath the dome? These are all the questions that we want to talk about. So let's go back to talk about dope MUT insulator. Let's go back to the MUT insulator at affilling. MUT insulator at affilling, I sketched the cartoon picture is this one. Now what happens if you dope the MUT insulator? Okay, these are people that looked at the MUT insulator. Well, it is quite complicated, and I will discuss in detail this phase diagram that was found by Giovanni Sordi, but let me make it as simple as possible by looking at zero temperature. So the zero temperature, I draw doping and interaction strength U. So these are calculations that are done for a square, just a plaquette, dynamical mean field theory. And you see this is the critical U for the MUT transition. And when you reach this, as you dope, you get a first order transition. So there's a first order surface that ends at a critical point that is clearly connected to the MUT physics at affilling, and the critical point goes to lower and lower temperature. And you see it seems to go towards this 12% doping. And this first order transition separates a correlated metal from a pseudo gap metal that has a smaller double occupancy and smaller entropy and properties I will discuss in a moment. So to illustrate the physics in the clearest way, I will stand very close to the Mott transition here and look at this value of U for various dopings. Then this has the advantage that the first order transition is easily seen in numerical calculations. So if you look at the phase diagram, then you have doping. You have this first order transition, and you go from a correlated metal to a pseudo gap. Here I have not allowed antiferromagnetism or superconductivity. I just look at the normal state that will be unstable to this. And there are crossover lines. There are two crossover lines that I will discuss in detail next time that are best illustrated by, this is a paper by Henri Alloul in the Le Compte Rendu, where if you look at the experimental results for the spin, the night shift, this is the red curve here, you see that you start to deviate from the Pauli susceptibility at T star, and then you go to a lower temperature where these other effects that I will discuss in a moment, like the charge density wave and so on, occur. So this is the experimental result for the spin susceptibility. Yes? Well, you remember here, okay, let me explain. So what happens is that this is a second order transition. This is a first order transition. Now, if you go back to this plot here, and now you have an antiferromagnetic phase, okay? You will never see this first order transition, but you will see the crossovers here. Yes, exactly. So if you go in, this case here, then if you go to this, then you have superconductivity here. So it could be that this first order transition is covered by superconductivity, but it's still relevant to describe the crossovers. That's in the spirit of dynamical mean field theory. So this is the normal state. It's a normal state that's unstable to superconductivity and all sorts of phases, but the crossovers are still well described by this dynamical mean field theory. So if you look at the spin susceptibility, you see it dives. It has an inflection point, and here it has an inflection point as well. Now, these crossovers I will describe in detail in the next presentation, but I want to say one more thing. And it is that associated with this first order transition, there's a line that is called the Widom line in the theory of phase transition, that is the continuation of the coexistence region in the supercritical region. So the air is just pressure, temperature, and it's just a liquid gas transition. So we know there's a critical point here. This is the line where the maxima of different response functions touch each other asymptotically. And it's a liquid gas transition is in water, for example. You have these quantities that have a maximum when you cross the Widom line. And it's also a dynamic crossover. In other words, if I look at the viscosity here, it will be gas-like. Here, it will be liquid-like. And the change is rather abrupt. So this, even though it's a crossover line, it's something that is present. So in our case, what is... Yes? Yeah, you go continuously. It's really a crossover. So if you look in our case, now I plot temperature. And now instead of filling, I plot the chemical potential. So F filling is here now. And here I dope going this way. Now, if you plot the electronic compressibility, in other words, dN, d mu. Now, if you're at a high temperature, this is a plot of this compressibility as a function of chemical potential. You see there's not much structure. This is the black curve here at high temperature. But if you go at the lowest temperature here, you see that the compressibility on this semi-log plot here gets pretty big. In fact, it diverges at the critical point. So this is very paradoxical because you're in a system where there's strong electronic repulsion. Nevertheless, it becomes very compressible at this point. And this has been seen before, even in single-site dynamical mean field theory, in this work of Cotillard, Murthy. And in fact, there were some experiments on the organics done in Sherbrooke that were explained by the group of Antoine that discussed the effect of this compressibility singularity. So along the Widom line, there's a maximum in compressibility. But there are all sorts of crossovers, again, that I will discuss next time. So what I will present in the next lecture is an alternate point of view of the phase diagram. So there's this transition that may or may not be observable, depending on the long-range order around it. And you have two crossover lines, the Widom line and a sort of a precursor. And the qualitative results I will show is that there's a compressibility maximum when you cross this Widom line. If you look at the density of states, it starts to decrease at T star on this line, and then it has an inflection point at the Widom line. Same for the susceptibility, it starts to go down at T star, then it has an inflection point. And if you look at the tendency to have anisotropic transport coefficient, they also start at this Widom line. So in the next lecture, I try to answer some of the questions I think I will answer, other I won't. But basically, we want answers to all these questions. Is the pseudo gap a crossover or a phase transition? What's the relation between the charge density wave and the pseudo gap? Why is it peaked at 12%? What is the origin of pneumaticity? Why is it superconducting? Why is there a dome? Does the one-band model capture the key physics? These are all the questions that will be addressed in the workshop, actually. This is a question comes from directly from Louis and Antoine. But I added one here, is the antiferromagnetic quantum critical point important? And what other lessons do we learn from other superconductors? So the things I won't explain for sure is this Kerr effect measurements, where they claim that there is a real phase transition at the pseudo gap. And I don't know if Philippe Bourges is here. Is he? No? Okay, very good. He would be very unhappy because I cannot explain this also. So these are this loop order that is sometimes explained. So in the remaining minutes I will talk about lessons from the organics. Right, the Kerr effect appears that it's yes. Yes. Yeah, very near. Yes. So the statement was that the Kerr effect occurs at much lower temperature than the pseudo gap, and the Bourges results are more in the vicinity of T star. Okay, so what about the organics? So these are early results of Olivier, and where you see this is the Fermi surface of the organics at U equals zero. And if you put interactions, you start to see losing parts of the Fermi surface. So this is the pseudo gap phenomenon. Okay, now these are our results for this anisotropic triangular lattice. So at T prime equals, so frustration is not so big. The normal state here is described by this blue region. So we look just at the blue region. We are at half filling. And here what is plotted is temperature. And here instead of interaction U, we plot T over U. That looks more like pressure. When I apply pressure, I change mostly hopping. So this looks more like pressure. And there's a first order transition here. This is the MUT transition that I showed you in this compound that was studied by the group of Denis Jérôme. Disregard the orange for now. Now what happens if you dope just a little bit, like 1%, you see again this first order transition at 1%, and there's the Widom line above that. So again, to show what happens, let's recall that when you cross the maximum of the, oops, I don't have it here. Yeah, when you cross just right above where the maximum is for the conductivity, you go from something that looks like it has a large Fermi surface to something that has a small Fermi surface. So it looks like looks more like a dope MUT insulator in this region. So so if we focus again on the normal state, there's this first order transition. You can see it very well in double occupancy. So if you look double occupancy as a function of pressure, you see a nice hysteresis loop here at low temperature. At high temperature, if you go here, you see instead an inflection point in the double occupancy. And if you look again crossing this Widom line here, you see that the imaginary part of the Green's function, in other words, the density of states, changes behavior depending on whether you're on the right or the left of that curve. So in one case, it looks more like a metal. There will be at zero frequency, there will be a large density of states here, and here it will go to a small density of states. Now, these are variational Monte Carlo calculations by this Japanese group. At half filling, you see a first order transition. This is the red points. So this is whatever this quantity is. It's a measure of energy, kinetic energy. So if you look at the kinetic energy as a function of U now this time, you see that there's a first order jump in the red points. And if you dope now, let's say 4% doping, this is the upper triangle, this is this. I don't know if it's a first order transition, but it's pretty sharp as well. Now, if you want to treat superconductivity, there's the analog of weakly and strongly correlated antiferromagnets. And now I'm talking about superconductivity in general. I'm digressing a little bit here. And I will come back on this in the second lecture. But there's a cartoon picture of superconductivity in an interacting system. And this, again, this was a Sherbrooke-Orsay contribution. Even before the high temperature superconductor, there was also Scalapino and it's based on Cohn-Lettinger ideas where you replace phonons by spin waves. And in this case, you can understand there's a solution to the BCS gap equation, even if you have a repulsion, even if U is positive here. Because everything here, this big E and 1 minus 2 times the Fermi function is positive. E is positive. And so if you're looking at the gap for a value of P where the gap is positive, if this function is large for P minus P prime that takes you to that point and the gap changes sign there, you can get rid of the minus sign and find a solution for this. Now there's also a cartoon strong coupling picture. So you start from the J, and you look at you do a mean field decomposition in the C operators here that come in. You find out that the mean field Hamiltonian will have antiferromagnetism and also D wave superconductivity. And this was again before the high TC, and this is credited to Pitayevsky and Buchner by Anderson, but I never found this this reference. Now, superconductivity in the organics is in the strongly correlated regime. And so these are the results from these cluster dynamical mean field methods. We start with zero temperature. So at zero temperature, I plot U over T and T prime over T. Let's look at this first Sherbrooke-Orsay compound. And if we look at T prime equals 0.6 T here, applying pressure means going down here. It means increasing T. So if you go down, you go from an antiferromagnet to a superconductor. And this yellow line here is a first order MUT transition, Right, so this is this coexistence region. Now, if we look at this other compound, which is more frustrated, T prime equals T, then you're at T prime is about equal to T, so you're in this regime, and you go from a spin liquid through a first order transition to the superconductor. And here we call this spin liquid, but it's a very pompous name. I mean, all that we mean is that we didn't find antiferromagnetism, so it's not a very rigorous result. But you see that the superconductivity lives in sort of a small region here. If frustration is too small, it will become antiferromagnetic instead of superconducting. If frustration is too large, it won't even want to form singlets. So that's why it lives in this region. And there are other compounds that by Valenti that have been placed on this on our phase diagram here. And these are results from variational methods. So let me get back to the results of cluster dynamical mean field theory. So I still have 5 minutes to go. I hope you can go through this. So this is the compound ATA filling is this. So you see superconductivity exists over about, this is 10 to the minus 1 gigapascal. So it exists over 0.3 gigapascal roughly. And this one here, this dope compound, you see at 10%, it lives on a range that's 5 times larger in pressure roughly. Now the results that we found is these orange regions for superconductivity, D-wave superconductivity. And if you look at the axis here, you see that you go from 3.5 to even, not even 4.5. But if you dope 10%, you see you go from 0.75 to 3. In fact, you do increase the range where superconductivity occurs over a broad range. And the maximum of superconductivity is the place where the Widom line is. So the phase diagram looks like this in this three-dimensional plot. You have temperature, you have pressure, T over U this way, and you have filling this way. So you're at half filling, you have a small sliver of superconductivity. And if you dope, you see it gets on a much larger range. And the maximum TC is sort of a maximum at slightly away from half filling. Now the generic case, the highly frustrated case, I would say looks like this. So what is new here is that I drew the antiferromagnetic phase. So this is the red line. And what you see is that you have a superconducting dome that has nothing to do with an antiferromagnetic quantum critical point. I mean, the two are disconnected. So the coupling mechanism here, it comes from J, but sort of short range J, not exchange of long wavelength spin fluctuations. And this is confirmed by variational, variational Monte Carlo was done before our work, but they get essentially the same result for the range where D-wave superconductivity exists, but they did not look at the antiferromagnetism. So in summary for the organism, with the organics, we have agreement with the experiment. Superconductivity, the TC is larger and there's a broader doping pressure range if it's dope. I didn't show this, but if you frustrate this more, you see that the nail temperature and TC both go down. There's a crossover to a pseudo gap in the normal state. And we predict that in the lightly doped compound, there will be a first order transition if you remove superconductivity. And it's easier to see in these compounds because the critical field is small. Now, this first order transition may be at very low temperature, or in fact, it may become quantum critical at sufficiently large U. That we really don't know. So physics-wise, we say that the superconducting dome we can have without an antiferromagnetic quantum critical point. It's sort of just an extension of the Mott physics at half filling. We get superconductivity from short range J, and TC decreases when we hit the Widom line. Now, Henri was pointing out that it would be very interesting to redo these calculations for the fullerenes. And the 3D fullerenes are an example of also of a Mott transition, but in 3D, so single site dynamical mean field theory should be good, and it's definitely a problem that should be looked at. So my collaborators are David Sénéchal, Giovanni. So my, this is my colleague. Giovanni is in London. Christian is in Rutgers. Bob Su has left physics now. Charles David Hébert did the is an undergraduate student that did the simulations for the organics. Dominique is the Yoffi Regal, and Patrick does all the magic with the computer programs. And this is where the money comes from. This is the people that take care of the computers. And now I need to have a teaser for next time. So so next time I will try to tell that this emergent, I mean, this first order transition is sort of an emergent phenomenon. I mean, at half filling, we have the Mott transition, which is something that, okay, how do you go from a metal to an insulator? You go through this first order transition, and it's something that it's a collective phenomenon. We have the same thing at finite doping. And I would say that this, I will call this the Sordi transition. And we can take this as an organizing principle for the pseudo gap and superconductivity. And I will discuss also how retardation, which is crucial for ordinary superconductivity, also is present in strongly correlated superconductivity. So thank you very much for your attention.